Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Listen in to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Explore, do you read? Explore. Astronaut is off structure. Dr. Stone is off structure.
What do I do?
Dr. Stone, detach.
No.
You must detach. If you don't detach, that arm's going to carry you too far. Listen to my voice. You need to focus. I'm losing visual of you. In a few seconds, I won't be able to track you. You need to detach. I can't see you anymore. Do it now.
Where's home, Dr. Stone?
Lake Zurich, Illinois.
Is there somebody down there looking up, thinking about you?
I had a daughter. A little girl with brown hair. Tell her that I'm not quitting.
Yes. That was the trailer for Gravity. Such impact that film will have, I believe. This is Sonia the Screamer, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy and 94.9 with a special review podcast for Gravity. This film was to be released today, well, October the 3rd, 2013. It'll be released in Australia and throughout the rest of the world October 4th. That is tomorrow, people. And let's talk Gravity. A film I just saw very recently, as in last night. Gravity starts off for the first few minutes, it's just blackness and space. And then we turn, our eye focuses on the planet, the big blue marble. It's looking less blue, but it looks amazing through the eyes of this man. The man is Alfonso Cuarón. Now, Alfonso Cuarón is probably a very well-known to most people who enjoy science fiction genre, and particularly of the dystopical nature, through his wonderful 2006 successful film, of course, Children of Men, based on the P.D. James book of the same name. Now, that did very well back in 26, incredibly well at the time, with Clive Owen and Julianne Moore as just a couple of the actors in that film. He's also been known for other films, obviously Mexican, as he hails from there, Why to Mama Tebian was one of them. He's also worked on none other than Harry Potter and The Prisoner of Azkaban. And of course, famously, I think that's probably the most moving and powerful of the Harry Potter genre and franchise. And I believe it's J.K. Rowling's favourite adaptation and film of her books. Now is for a Gravity. Well, Gravity is a topsy-turvy space adventure world indeed. And which way is down and which way is up? The clever thing is we see the point of view of the astronauts, but also the point of view if we were up there with them in space, which is very interesting. And especially when it's done in 3D and done so masterfully by Cuarón and his team. And what's the story about? Well, it's about a woman astronaut and doctor. Her name's Dr. Ryan Stone. Yes, her name's Ryan. Apparently, we find out later, spoiler, that her dad wanted a son. That's her unusual name, and that's the name she has. She's played, of course, by the remarkable Sandra Bullock. Incredible performance. And she's on her first space shuttle mission. She's accompanied by others, and one of them is a veteran astronaut, Matt Kowalski. Now, he's commanding this as his final expedition. So we've got a new bee and an old bee clashing virtually. And he's doing his spacewalk, or more like his jetpack fly around the shuttle while the shuttle's up there orbiting Earth, fixing up the Hubble, the very famous one, of course, the biggest telescope ever made by man, as it floats around the outside of planet Earth. While they're drilling and trying to get things sorted, and while, of course, Dr. Ryan Stone is the last one to fix some sort of technical panel, that's obviously very important. While we see this mundane engineering going on, Kowalski tries to make light of it all by chit-chat, of all things, about the Mardi Gras of New Orleans. Anyway, he's obviously quite a character, and I guess that's his strength. Morale keeping and inspiring people to keep them focused as well. And I think he discovers early on that Dr. Stone is quite reserved and withdrawn, and it appears that she's under the weather, or should I say, not over the moon. She may have space sickness, which I can believe happen. It's pretty much like being on a submarine. As, of course, the film points out at the very, very beginning, that in space it's like a vacuum, of course, and there is no such thing as sound. So, you know, it's a place not inhabited with life, basically. So to put humans up into space, as we all probably realise, is not just a challenge physically, but emotionally and mentally, as we find out later in the film, as it progresses. Now, during all this, they're in touch back with the base on Earth, of course, that being Houston, and back at Mission Control in Houston. They call it In the Blind. Now, when they're saying that, that's when there's no communication going both ways, and In the Blind becomes almost a statement that they use through the film. Now, what happens is debris is orbiting and heading straight for Explorer, the shuttle. At first, they're alarmed, and then realizing the impending impact that could come, they realize they must get their crap together very quickly, get back on the shuttle Explorer ASAP, and get the hell out of there. So Houston gives them a warning that they probably will not have any more transmission because all satellites are down, and that means all satellite globally will probably be down. So with that impending crash, they will be in the blind, so to speak. So Kowalski and Stone manage to get their crap together in time, they think, spoiler, to get back on the shuttle. But unfortunately, impact. Messy debacle debris, caused by the Russians, of course, who have shot a satellite by mistake with a nuclear weapon of some sort, as we discover, strikes them. And during this chaos, in marvellous 3D, coming at me while I'm sitting there as a voyeur myself, as a spectator of a disaster, I flinched. That's how much, that's how impressive this film is visually. So they're in the blind, because what happens next? Sadly, Dr. Ryan Stone loses her grip and she's pummeled, or hurtled, I should say, into space, into nothingness, head over heels, over head over heels. Now, she tries to keep her shit together, but hyperventilating as you would, and panicking and being head over heels with no way of stopping and righting yourself upright, because in space, what is upright? Which way is up? She's in danger of hyperventilating and using up all of her oxygen. But then there he comes, or here he comes, Kowalski to the rescue with that wonderful jetpack on his back. He hooks her up to a line that becomes a lifeline, like an umbilical cord, and he tows her towards, the Explorer shuttle. So he rescues her, basically, playing his country music that he loves inside his mic in his helmet to try and cheer her up. Now, it's during this 90-minute or less, actually not 90 minutes, during this little journey to get back to the Explorer shuttle so that they can get back to Earth, what occurs is he finds out that Dr. Stone is like her name. She's almost impenetrable. She has actually lost the child and she's still grieving, or not have come to terms with that type of loss. So he tries to cheer her up and realizes that it's not working. By that stage, they get to the shuttle, and then, of course, well, the discovery is made that the Explorer is no longer able to be usable. Their best bet, he realizes, Kowalski takes the initiative and knows that they have to get to the ISS, which is the International Space Station. It's not far away, it's 90 minutes, and that's the length of the film, by the way. So he tries to jetpack there with her in tow. This film's all about timing. This film's all about what do you do with a limited amount of time. And we see digital clocks again and again. The ones on the suit of the astronauts, the ones inside the pods of the astronauts. So we see this constantly. It's very revealing. But it keeps us on board. It keeps us on track with the desperation and the limited action and the limited thought processes that you can have when you're under this sort of pressure. This is serious business. So I'm sitting there thinking, wow. And I almost forget to breathe myself. So they get to the ISS and then something terrible happens. I'm not going to go into that too much. I don't want to spoil it too much. But let's just say, yeah, this is about survival after all. There's a capsule or a module inside the ISS that they must get to because it's that module that can help them return to Earth. That's the idea. Now, one of the modules is missing and there's only one left. But because it's been so damaged, they need to get to a Chinese station that's not far away. So you can see there's a lot of work they need to do. And all of this has to be done in a very limited time, 90 minutes. Now, as far as visuals go, this film is just... I'll just skip to that because this film is just so beautifully filmed, beautifully done. The cinematographer is, of course, very famous and one of the Cuarón team, also a Mexican, Emmanuel Lubezki. He's best known for his work with Cuarón, but also he's worked with Guillermo del Toro, Iñárritu Arriaga Guillermo. He's worked with Tim Burton on Sleepy Hollow. He did the cinematography of Children of Men in 2006, also Burn After Reading, and most beautifully done, The Tree of Life by Malick in 2011. This man has exceptional taste and a beautiful eye for cinematography. I mean, this is a quote, his own personal quote, is, "The language of film is further and further away from the language of theatre and is closer to music. It's abstract but still narrative. Everything feels less rehearsed. It's more experimental than classical." And this man is using experiments, definitely. But the look of the film, thanks to Lubezki, I think will make it one of the most memorable sci-fi films of this generation. Back to the movie Gravity, however, it's all about, like I said, survival. So it's a matter of getting from one capsule to a station to another capsule back to planet Earth. That's the trajectory, one could say. It's just the getting there that leaves you breathless. Now, Sandra Bullock plays, like I said, Dr. Stone, and there's a really telling, amazing scene, one of my favourites in the whole film, where she arrives in one of the first modules on board the ISS. She climbs into the pod itself, decompressurizes so she has oxygen, and takes her spacesuit off. And it's the taking off of the revealing of the spacesuit that reveals the woman inside. It's very much Ripley-esque and a touch of Barbarella. If anyone's seen Jane Fonda undressing a 1967 Barbarella, which was just pure space ham and campiness, you'd understand what I mean. But this is different. This is the cold, bleak reality of what can happen in space if you aren't organized and if a disaster strikes. So as she's taking off her space suit, which is incredibly big and it must be bloody heavy in real gravity time, she's in zero gravity inside the capsule, and we see her being portrayed in such a beautiful, fitting way. There's one point in the film where she is taking off her suit and all she's left with is shorts and a singlet. Very Ripley-esque, like I mentioned. But she passes out. There's a moment she's totally still with her eyes closed and you're thinking she's fainted. Fainting in space, zero gravity. I don't think I've ever seen that before. There's no blood. There's no aliens coming out of her chest. She's just damn exhausted. The stress, the trial of getting into that pod, of surviving that terrible satellite running amok debris has really had an impact. And you know, and you feel it with her. Your empathy levels are very high, as well as your adrenaline. But it gives us, the viewer, a little bit of breathing space as well. So it's a fascinating depiction in that one scene. It's only about 15 or 20 seconds, but possibly the best I've seen in cinema. She says nothing. She's floating. She's passed out in space. She's inside a capsule. And it must be pretty damn cold. Because it gets very cold in space, of course. And it also fluctuates and gets very hot. So she's lying there floating, and you see every bit of weight in her body. It's so cleverly done. There must have been a lot of technical and scientific research into making this film look as real and as authentic as possible. Now, once she comes to, it dawns on her what she must do, and she has to act very quickly. Now, of course, while she goes through the ISS, or the International Space Station, once she's acclimatized slightly, there's many little motifs that are very cute throughout this film, if you can call it cute. We see chess pieces floating in the foreground in 3D coming at us. I guess a salute or homage to the mental agility of the Russian culture. Well, in space, in any case. Now, being an International Space Station, it has manuals in English and other languages, so she learns how to fly again. She's only done it with a simulator, as she's told Clooney or Kowalski, and so she has no or very, very limited experience of being in space. It's her first time, after all. And then this happens. How would most people normally react? Of course, Dr. Stone is a rock, pretty much, as it turns out, and she manages just barely. But I won't spoil it too much. I just want to say that the performance of Sandra Bullock is possibly one of the best I've seen in sci-fi in a long time. Now she has to get to this other station, a Chinese one, and of course more trials ensue, more letdowns. And instead of being chased by aliens, she's been chased by her own self-doubt. Self-doubt is what this film is about, actually, and letting yourself down because you don't believe in enough of yourself, not having confidence, and also the loss and grief of a loved one all comes to a very pointed head for her as Dr. Stone. And you really empathize and feel sympathy for this character. Well, I certainly did. I came close to tears, actually, because I just thought, this is so special, the way that they're treating the characters here. And my feeling overall that this film isn't really science fiction at all. It's inaccurate to say that, actually. This is more of a thriller or suspense drama in space, set in space, but that's probably all. It is about how a human can reconnect to themselves under pressure, under the most extreme pressure, and even when all the huge, massive odds seem overwhelmingly against that person, the hope's still there, and they fight. And they struggle, and they bloody well overcome those odds. And what they do is try, and try, and try, and try. And that's what we see this woman, Dr. Stone, doing, fighting. It's almost like one has to believe that this is a way of bringing the spirit of cinema back into cinema, rebirthing it, reborn. There's a lot of symbolism and motifs here, umbilical cords like giant oxygen cords and cables and lines and all these things floating around her, keeping her grounded, you could say, keeping her connected and in touch with machinery, because her companions are machinery. Her companions is the broken down station, is the module, the capsule, the buttons, the lights, the switches. These are the things that are her friends now, are her company, and she has to learn to use that effectively and immediately. Now, the immediacy and the intimacy that is projected in this film is amazing. How to balance both of those is a sign of a true maestro of, you know, cinema making. This becomes art. Now, it's certainly not a dull film. And what I really loved about it is that, like I said, it's a thriller more than anything else. It's more science fiction fact or science fact film than anything else. It could be straight out of a NASA documentary. That's how believable it seems. And also, it shows too that all you need to do is write really good human characters to keep a story bouncing, to keep a story interesting and fascinating, with just enough awesome technology in it to factor in and to obviously invite and tempt fanboys and fangirls and geeks everywhere. all tech nerds at least. So for those of you who love space travel in the real sense of it, the moon landing, the Apollo missions and NASA, our cosmonaut technology and Russian and Chinese technology in space, you're going to love the sensibility and the look of this film. It's very realistic. But it's also a moving self-discovery story and a very strong advocacy for women. The portrayal of a woman by a male director, I haven't seen this done so well in a science fiction, so-called science fiction film in a long time. Because she's not just strong, she's also incredibly weak. She's also self-effacing. She's also negative and self-destructive and doesn't believe in herself enough. And she's shy and withdrawn. But she's, you know, she hasn't given up completely. She still has that pragmatic sense and the emotional sense too. It's a real mixture. It's what makes it a real type of film to believe in. It's solid, as three-dimensional as she can be, just like the 3D. With the 3D glasses on, you could feel the weight of this film. Yes, it has explosions, amazing fast-moving special effects and CGI that makes you lose your breath, of course, and flinch in your seat. But it has something that 3D can't enhance, and that is a good storyline that's not as predictable as you would think. It has even a dream sequence, but I'm not going to go into that. And it has, it has great symbols throughout it. And you know, it's not about superheroes, and that makes it a great refreshing change. So you don't have to have supernatural powers or be a supreme being of some sort with a cape or giant hammer to be able to do good things, to be able to survive. And that's what's good about Gravity. And that's why I'm giving Gravity 5 out of 5. I'm saying that this film has saved all of us, saved our ass, and that's what makes it a superior movie. And as for Sandra Bullock, well, she's going to be hopefully an Oscar contender for this. Now, I have to say, in the last scenes of the film, when, spoiler, she does become back on terra firma, the struggle to get there, you just, like I said, you feel exhausted, but you feel uplifted too. So she lands on Earth in a lake, and it's obviously an exotic, very secluded sort of area. It feels like it could be somewhere in Mesoamerica. Maybe that's the strength of the film, with a lot of Mexican culture references in it. And like her, she's struggling to rise above the surface in the lake, to swim to the top, and you see in the foreground in 3D a little frog doing exactly that, fighting its way to get to the surface of the lake. And I was finding that interesting, that symbolism, because in Olmec and Mexican Meso culture, the frog is the fight for the spirit. The frog is a symbol for rebirth and fertility. And I thought, aha, I wonder. Then we see, of course, Dr. Stone on the mud. She's grabbing a fistful of muddy sand and she's breathing. She's breathing again. She's back on Earth. She struggles to her feet, wobbly as anything, as you can understand, and you feel the whole weight and the burden of what's happened to her, but also the weight of being back on land. And for people who've ever been out on the ocean for more than 3 days, and I can vouch for that because I've done it myself, wow, all I can say is when you get off a boat, the world just seems, or Earth, the beach, the ground just seems to pull you to it, like pulling you down. It's amazing. Amazing what gravity can do. So we see her, she's like a hero to us. She's like a giantess as well. And she's in this exotic, well, we don't know where it is. Now, my friend who was with me turned to me and said, is she in the future or is she back in the past? Is there going to be a dinosaur looming in the distance? And I had to laugh. I did. Because let's face it, the space shuttle originally is called the Explorer in this film. So who knows what Quaron is hinting at? I'll leave you with that. There could be a sequel and it might be how Dr. Stone rocks on with some Brontosaurus. Just kidding. But it did make me think. Like I said, I'm giving this 5 out of 5. And I'm saying, go see it, people. It starts today. It's pretty much everywhere. And it's out now all over Australia. Okay, now for the specifications. It's directed by Alfonso Cuarón. It's produced by him and David Heyman. Written by Cuarón and his son Jonas. Stars Sandra Bullock as Dr. Ryan Stone. and George Clooney as Matt Kowalski. Music is amazing. Soundtrack by Stephen Price. Cinematography by Manuel Lubezki. It's edited by Cuaron and Mark Sanger. The studio is Cuaron's own, Esperanto Films and Heyday Films. Distributed by Warner Brothers. It was first screened August 28th at the Venice Film Festival of 2013. And the release date, like I said, internationally will be today and tomorrow. Its running time is 90 minutes. Keep an eye on that clock. It's an American and a UK production. It's in English and it cost a budget of $80 million. It's filmed in the UK at the old Shepperton Studios. And it's just a lovely, lovely piece of cinema art. I enjoyed it. It was frustrating. It was high adrenaline and action. Worth every little bit of it. Every minute counts for Gravity. This is Sonia and a special podcast review only on Joy 94.9 for Sci-Fi and Squeam. Thank you.
Saturday, October the 19th, 2013. It's 3 p.m. The mothership has landed. Queer Geeks of Oz is here. Queer Geeks of Oz, for all you LGBTIQ, sci-fi, horror, and pop culture fans. History will be made. Time travel will be achieved at Armageddon, at the Melbourne Showgrounds here in Batmania. For the very first time, LGBTIQ people represent. With Queer Geeks of Oz, a special panel only at Armageddon. Sci-Fi and Squeam presents Queer Geeks of Oz. Get your geek on, queers.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.